It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Last week, the Wisconsin Justice Department released previously unseen data relating to how law enforcement and the justice system handled domestic violence. Among the key findings, in recent years, prosecutors have sought less severe charges for domestic violence than the police. We take a look at what that data means on the morning show. But first, we want to make sure you have all the information you need. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That number is 1-800-799-7233. If you can get information or details on resources, ask questions about unhealthy aspects of a relationship. Someone will answer 24 hours a day. Again, that number is 800-799-7233. So what policy changes, listeners, do you hope to see when it comes to how Wisconsin handles domestic violence? Do you think immediate arrests in domestic violence cases are important? What about time in jail or prison? Do you work in law enforcement? Are you an anti-domestic violence advocate? We would like to hear from you this hour. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Chase Terrier is the public policy coordinator at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Chase, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
Let's look at the key takeaways from this data from the Wisconsin Department of Justice and maybe try and figure out what they actually mean, starting with the fact that between 2013 and 2016, the number of immediate arrests in domestic violence disputes or arrests that happen right when police are called in dropped by more than 10%. What's the significance of this statistic?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say the first thing to keep in mind is that with this data, there's a lot of variability from county to county, from community to community, as far as how they're reporting these numbers. So you really have to take them with a grain of salt. We don't want to draw any broad conclusions from these numbers alone. That being said, you know, there are some sort of important assumptions or guesses we can make about what this has, what the context of this is. I would say broadly, incidents of non-fatal domestic violence have dropped dramatically since the 80s and 90s. The Bureau of Justice Statistics showed that non-fatal domestic violence incidents declined 63% between 1994 and 2012. A lot of that has to do with an increased priority on getting victim services out into the community, so making sure that victims have access to those life-saving services. So as that has increased, we've seen arrests generally decline. Now, as far as why immediate arrests have declined, I think there's a number of reasons that we can look to for that. One of them is because a lot of times victims don't want their abusers to be arrested. Maybe they call law enforcement because they want an interruption of the violence that's going on at that time, but they're not asking for that abuser to be immediately incarcerated. So that's something we see quite often, and there's a lot of reasons for that. It also can be in many communities that law enforcement is actually doing a better job of making fewer arrests when they aren't necessary. So, for example, when mandatory arrest was first passed back in the late 80s, there was a liability provision that meant that if a police officer was supposed to arrest somebody for mandatory arrest and they didn't, they could be held accountable personally for up to $1,000, which meant that they were arresting a lot of people that didn't need to be arrested, including victims of crime and victims of domestic violence, because they didn't want to be held liable for those things. So as law enforcement has gotten better, as domestic violence advocates have worked really hard to train and work with law enforcement to make them better at responding to these issues, we've seen that general trend of arrests going down and immediate arrests going down with them. So there's a lot of different reasons. It can also be a strain on resources for law enforcement in the justice system generally.
So do those mandatory arrest liabilities, do those financial penalties still exist?
They do not, is my understanding. I have to check the statutes and see, but that was something that was initially included and led to a lot of unnecessary arrests in 1990, shortly after that was passed, and it included those provisions. There were over 40,000 arrests So we see those numbers have been a lot higher in the past. And so as we've sort of reexamined some of those initial provisions included in that statute and looked for ways to improve the law enforcement response, the criminal justice response, we've seen arrests sort of steadily decline over the years.
So we have in this latest report, we've got 3 years worth of data. Can we call it a trend based on that, or do we need to have more?
Well, I mean, you can certainly, you know, it's interesting data. I encourage people to take a look at it. I think, you know, yes, in the short term, we can say, yes, this is a trend. We can look at these cases. But it's important that we look at them in the broader context of what's been happening over the last few decades. I would also say that the 2016 numbers are probably likely to change. You might notice that there's a lot more open cases from 2016. I had a chance to speak to the folks at DOJ, and they basically said, yeah, there's a lot more open cases, but that's because they're more recent. So a lot of those cases maybe are closed or will be closed, but we won't have those numbers until the 2017 data is out. So there's a couple of caveats there that we have to make.
So why might a law enforcement officer decide not to make an immediate arrest in a domestic violence incident?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think in general, like I said, it used to be in the past that a lot of times we would see things like dual arrests on the scene. So maybe there was an abusive situation, there was some violence occurring, and that the victim of domestic violence would defend themselves. And so maybe there would be some scratches or there would be some evidence that there had been violence from both sides, or at least that's how it would be interpreted at the time. So both of those people would be arrested. So as domestic violence advocates have worked really closely with law enforcement, we've seen those types of incidents decline a lot, and that continues to go on. And then, like I said, you know, I think there's a growing recognition in the domestic violence community that the law enforcement response, the criminal justice response to domestic violence, isn't always the best response. It's not always what makes survivors more safe. Now, obviously, there are always going to be cases where, for the safety of that survivor, for the safety of their family, and for the community, abusers need to be, you know, incarcerated, or they need to be arrested at the scene, you know, of the crime. But there are cases where, if you ask survivors, if you talk to them, you know, what do you want to happen right now? They might say, well, I just want the violence to stop right now, but I don't want my abuser to go to jail. You know, maybe it would be extremely disruptive for their family. Maybe they know that if their abuser goes to jail, they're likely to lose their job. And if they lose their job, that income is going to be gone from their family, and that's going to put them in a very precarious situation. So that's definitely part of the problem. But there's a lot of different factors that we have to take into consideration.
We're talking about domestic violence and a new report that's just out from the Department of Justice with Chase Terrier, the public policy coordinator at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Domestic violence inherently deals with people who have relationships. How much do the wants of the victim play into what happens to someone accused?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. I would say, you know, if you ask domestic violence advocates and people that work in domestic violence, we would say not enough. And that's really one of our priorities, is making sure that the criminal justice system, law enforcement, all of these systems that survivors come into contact with are what we call trauma-informed. That's sort of a term you might hear tossed around a lot in this work. And what that means to us is that the experience that survivors have of these systems is grounded in what the survivor feels is best for them. So instead of telling a victim of domestic violence, this is what's going to keep you safe, this is what you need to do, asking them, what do you feel would keep you safe? What do you feel is your first priority right now? And acting on behalf of that, rather than just telling victims what they need or what they don't need.
We're talking about domestic violence in Wisconsin in light of a new report from the Justice Department. What policy changes do you hope to see in this arena? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Chase Terrier is the public policy coordinator at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Our conversation with him continues in a moment. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're discussing domestic violence in Wisconsin in light of a new report from the State Justice Department. What policy changes do you hope to see when it comes to how the Wisconsin justice system handles domestic violence? Do you think immediate arrests in domestic violence cases are important? What about time in jail or prison? Maybe you work in law enforcement. What do you think about all of this? Are you an anti-domestic violence advocate? We'd like to hear from you. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Chase Terrier is the public policy coordinator at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Chase, we've seen less jail time in domestic violence cases lately. Have there also been more justice alternatives? For example, restorative justice, which is something that we talked to with Janine Geske about yesterday, or court-mandated therapy. Are we seeing more alternatives?
Yeah, we are seeing more alternatives. In some communities, especially, there has been more of a focus on some of those restorative justice practices and trauma-informed practices. So again, going back and asking victims of domestic violence, what do you want to happen in this case? What is the best situation for you? And if you ask survivors, what they'll say is, no, I don't want my abuser to go to jail. I want them to get help. I want them to get treatment. So batterer's treatment is not sort of a controversial issue in Wisconsin. We don't have sort of an official governing body over batterer's treatment, so it's hard to know when those therapy treatment processes are safe and if they're accredited, but there is more of a focus on that. I think we're looking for innovative solutions as a state to deal with these issues beyond just simply incarcerating people. But it is also important to keep in mind that we have a long way to go, especially when it comes to things like racial disparity in our criminal justice system. You know, if you look at the population of Wisconsin, African Americans make up 6% of our population here in the state, but 23% of victims are African American, and 32% of offenders are African American. And that's not because they're more violent than other people or anything like that. It's just because these communities of color are over-policed. So while there is more of a restorative justice focus, I think, increasingly, we've still got a long way to go and a lot of issues we need to resolve.
So what would you like to see happen here in terms of what happens when a domestic violent defendant doesn't go to jail or prison? How could we do a better job of following up to make sure they're getting the help that they need and they're making the changes that that need to be made?
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the most important things we can do in these situations is make sure that we are connecting victims of domestic violence to community-based services in their area. That's one of the top factors that can make sure that we're keeping victims safe moving forward, is making sure that they're connected with advocates who can help them safety plan, who can connect them with legal aid, who can make sure that they have some resources and some knowledge that they need to stay safe. That's one of the best things we can do. There's also community-based programs that collaborate law enforcement with community-based advocates, and that's another way that we can really keep victims safe. So even if that abuser hasn't been arrested, if we make sure that victims are getting connected to services, that law enforcement is communicating with those advocates, that's a really important step. There's also, like I said, there is some in some areas of the state, they do good batterers treatment work. I think there's a growing recognition that we need to do more to make those services available, because we hear survivors ask for that a lot. They want their abusers to be able to get into treatment. So I think, we have over the last few years been exploring that issue, and I think that continues to be something we consider. How can we make batterers treatment more effective? How can we make sure that it's accredited, that we know the people that are doing that treatment work are doing it in the right way to keep victims safe? So there's a lot of open-ended questions there, but we're certainly focused on those issues.
Well, let's take a look at another piece from the data that was just released. From 2013 to 2016, prosecutors also sought weaker charges than law enforcement in domestic violence cases. Where does that discrepancy come from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I think one of the first things we have to keep in mind when it comes to prosecution in our criminal justice system is there is an enormous lack of resources and a strain on our criminal justice system right now in the state. So we've got a real shortage of DAs, assistant district attorneys all across the state. We've also got a shortage of public defenders to represent criminal defendants. So there's a real burden placed on our criminal justice system, which has the effect of increasing the amount that DAs and prosecutors have to sort of try to shuttle people through the system. So rather than sort of having the resources they need to really apply nuance and a specific approach to each case. They're more focused on, you know, what's going to stick, what charges can I file that are going to go through and are going to work, and how can I sort of get this process started and ended as quickly as possible, because I've got so many other cases I've got to get to. So maybe, you know, when charges are filed by the police, they might say, hey, you know, this is what I'm charging this person with, these are the crimes that I would like to see, and the DA takes a look at it and says, well, I don't know if I have evidence for that. I don't know if I'm going to get that charge, so I'm going to lower it down a little bit because I think I'm more likely to get this case processed. So that's a big part of it. You've also always got the potential factor of maybe that victim was involved in the case from the start, but later on they may not want to testify against their abuser because, as we mentioned before, they may not want that abuser to be incarcerated. So that's a factor that has to be considered as well.
We have a caller who wants to join us. We'll go to Milwaukee, and Marcus is on the line. Marcus, welcome to the morning show.
Hi, John. So thank you for taking my call. Now, this is a number of years ago, but I was dating a woman that when she got to a point of drinking, she'd become physically violent. And there was twice where the police came to my residence. Once the neighbors called, and once I ended up having the call just to have her removed. One of the times the police were actually kind of sitting there like laughing about it, like, you know, like it's a woman hitting a guy, you know, like you can't handle this. But I was raised not to put my hands on a woman, not to hit a woman. And so, you know, it's like I felt I had no other option because, but I chose not to prosecute because one of the times when I met with the DA, the DA basically said what you were just talking about, which is, you know, like, what can I prove, you know. And because it was a female attacking a man, I guess it didn't carry the same weight, perhaps. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Marcus, thanks for your story. Chase Terrier?
Yeah, I want to say thank you for that call and for sharing that story. You know, that's disclosing that is not always easy, and I really appreciate it. And it gets to a really important point, which is that domestic violence affects all people across all communities and all populations. We know that 1 in 4 women are going to be the victim of violence from the hands of an intimate partner, but also 1 in 7 men are also going to be a victim of violence at the hands of an intimate partner. So it's really important that we recognize that, you know, anybody can potentially end up in an abusive relationship, and it's never their fault, and it's never something that should be taken lightly. And so certainly there is more we can do to make sure that when anybody is contacting law enforcement, whether they are a man or a woman, you know, gender nonconforming, whoever is reaching out to law enforcement or the criminal justice system, if they are a victim of domestic violence, they deserve to be taken seriously, and they deserve to be given the services that keep them safe. So I just really want to thank Marcus for sharing that with us, because you know, that's really important, and I appreciate his point.
We've got about a minute left here. What policy changes are you looking for example, the state legislature when it comes to how Wisconsin handles domestic violence?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I think there's a number of different areas that we could focus on. First, I think there are some broad criminal justice reforms that we would look to in conjunction with a lot of our partners that will sort of ease the burden that's currently facing our criminal justice system. So, for example, we're talking about things like ending truth in sentencing, particularly for victimless crimes. We're talking about decriminalizing drug possession, especially for marijuana and low-level possession charges, crimes that really don't have victims. These are nonviolent crimes. So if we sort of stop focusing on crimes like that, then our criminal justice system will have a lot of resources freed up to focus on violent crime and keeping people safe and keeping victims safe. I think there's also policies we can look to that maybe wouldn't come from the legislature but are still really vitally important, like the Lethality Assessment Program is a program that ensures that law enforcement is collaborating with advocates in their area and are connecting victims to services in those really in those cases that are very have a high probability of homicide. So that's okay. A great program, and I really encourage people to reach out to their law enforcement to make sure they're implementing.
Chase, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Chase Terrier, Public Policy Coordinator at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Again, if someone you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, the hotline number 800-799-7233. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.